want you to know that it's our time. You and me bleed the same light. I want you to know that I'm all yours. You and me run the same course. I'm slipping down a chain reaction, and here I go, here I go, here I go, go. And once again I'm yours in fractions. It takes me down, pulls me down, pulls me down low. Honey, it's raining tonight, but storms always have an eye, have an eye. Tell me you're covered tonight, or tell me.
Sports Talk in the Burg, coming at you live from RMU Radio, your campus, your voice. Zach Lauffer with Ian Kist, Colin Wilson, and Sam Anthony. I wasn't here last week, but the guys did a very good job filling in for me. Colin, shout out to you for taking the host duties.
No problem.
It's definitely not easy, right?
Not at all.
We had a lot of stuff that happened this past week, including the Steelers' disappointing loss to the rival Baltimore Ravens. You got stuff coming up this week with tomorrow's NL wild card game, Pirates versus Cubs, Cole Arrieta. And you got the Penguins season opener at Dallas on Thursday. Much more are coming to talk about here on RMU Radio, your campus, your voice. So, let's start with the Steelers. What did you see? Oh, let's talk about the kicking dilemma that the entire NFL seemed to have over this past weekend. Started with Thursday, Scobie missing two crucial field goals. Ended up costing the Steelers the game, and it cost Scobie his job. How much of that do you place on the fact that they – I wouldn't say – all right, let me think for a second. We know that Scobie lost his job. Chris Boswell is coming in, never played a single down of football in his career, and is now coming in to kick footballs for the Pittsburgh Steelers, something that Josh Scobie was unable to do successfully. Do you think that cutting him was the right move? Now, granted, there's a $2.5 million cap hit that they are taking now that they cut him, which is not something that was probably easy for them to do, especially being a capped sport. Also, they don't get that draft pick back because they traded the seventh rounder to the Jaguars for.
The only thing I'm thinking of is, what do you do if Boswell doesn't work out? Say he comes in and he misses three field goals a game.
They're not going
like,
to do
what
anything.
You can't do anything. You can't bring.
Nope.
I think they, yeah, everybody wanted things about Scobie on social media. Obviously, Steeler fans not happy, but I think you need to keep him at least one more game. He misses two in the next game, then, yeah, maybe do something. But it is your kicker. Obviously, the Steelers had to rely on him to make field goals, especially one in overtime to win the game. He missed it.
Right.
So it is a big deal, especially with Roethlisberger being out, having to utilize your kicker offensively due to lack of experience and lack of ability down in the red zone. But I think they should have waited another week to hold off, because now what happens if a guy that has never played – a single down in his life replaces a veteran. Yes, his veteran is struggling, but yet he's been in the league for 10 years.
That veteran just so happened to be 50% on all of his kicks so far this season. Just throwing that out there.
I don't have a problem with him cutting Scobie, or going with another guy, I should say. But, I mean, Scobie had his shots in the season. I mean, they played four games, and you said he's 50% on all kicks this season. I mean, that's not good at all, especially for a veteran. So you get fresh legs in there. You get a guy who has no experience, but he isn't psyched out like Scobie is. Like, you have a lot of downtime as a kicker in the NFL between kicks, and that really can mess with your psyche. And you get a guy that's fresh in there. I don't think it could get worse than Scobie. No. I guess what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to look at it this way. It's the NFL. It's a 16-game season. We're a quarter of the way through. And honestly, like, I know, you know, it was a good point, you know, give him another chance. But I don't think the Steelers can afford that, especially with the injuries that they're suffering right now. You know, Roethlisberger's out, and they need to win games while he's out, because when he comes back, that's when you're hitting the tough part of the schedule. And the sad part is that he had two chances to win the game for the Steelers. Mm-hmm. And potentially three or four, because if Mike Tomlin had decided to take those kicks in overtime. But because of that, you know, there was no faith in him anymore. And it was evident. And it was just, he had to go. I mean, the fans were tearing him apart, and the Steelers didn't even trust him to kick it when they needed to.
I mean, I knew this was going to happen eventually. As soon as they traded for Scobie, I thought, oh boy, I wonder how long he's going to last. Because there was a reason why they were willing to just let this kicker that they've had for 10-some years go. He wasn't getting it done. I like to defend kickers sometimes, because I don't like when people say it's their only job. They have one job and they can't do that.
It's a tough job.
It's like telling your quarterback you're not going to play for 90% of the time. But when you do play, you come on, you need to throw a strike 50 yards down the field right into Antonio Brown's hands. If you don't do that, we lose the game. Good luck. Go. And you sit there and you think, wow, maybe I was being a little harsh on him. It's not the fact that he missed those field goals at opportune times. It's that after so long, after being in the league for so long, your mind can't be in it anymore. I think that's what you're seeing with Peyton Manning now, too. When the arm's going and now the mind's starting to go and he's been struggling, I think that's what's really happening. Anything else before we...
Well, oh, you go.
It's just that the Steelers, they lose on it. You know, they had to give up a draft pick to get Scobie. So that's my main point. Yeah, Scobie wasn't doing good, 50%, but overall the Steelers lose in their decision.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at Scobie's statistics right now. I mean, 2 years ago in 2013, he was 23 for 25 kicking field goals.
Right.
And last year, he was 20 for 26. Like, he's on pace to be significantly worse than he already is. I know, and you know, he's had 10 field goal attempts through four games, which is a lot for a kicker. But, I mean, he's missing kicks at 42, 44, 46. You know, these are the ones you're supposed to, you know, to make. You're supposed to miss the ones that are 52, 54. I mean, the reason the Ravens won that game was because you had the guy who hit the 52-yard field goal to win the game.
And I think a lot of it has to do with the PAT getting moved back. You have kickers now not having just a chip shot for a PAT anymore. They kind of get psyched out. Maybe they miss one. And now you have them getting psyched out. What?
So the pressure's on.
Oh, exactly. If you miss one there, then you're asked to kick a field goal, and it's like, wow, I can't even make a PAT, let alone a field goal. So the PAT mindset the mindset's still the same, but the PAT is so much more significant, and that definitely has a role in kickers all over, not only Scobie, but I think this definitely played a role in this situation.
Yeah, it definitely has played a factor, no doubt. And everyone was downplaying it, I think, before the season started. They make 30-yarders all the time, that won't mean anything, but it's just another field goal that they have to make. If a team scores six touchdowns in a game, that's six 30-yard field goals. Yeah. More often than not, at least one of those is not going to go through the uprights. I mean, you miss kick a ball by half an inch, and that ball either goes sailing to the right or sailing to the left. There is such a pinpoint accuracy that comes with being an NFL kicker that I don't think people give enough credit for.
And you're having coaches come out and say the game plan is to go for two now, just because it's actually a difficult kick for a lot of kickers. So it's definitely changed the game a lot. The NFL saw this coming, and I think it is, in the NFL's perspective, good for the game. It gets offensive flowing. It really looks good, maybe on a media standpoint, but it's definitely not good for the kickers. It definitely affects.
It's what the NFL wanted, to make extra points more difficult.
Exactly. It adds to the game.
Yeah, they're getting what they pretty much asked for. Teams are going for two. So if we see the Steelers do that typically on their first touchdown, they go right, the media knows to go right to the coach, put the camera right on the coach, and so put the one or the two up. And Tomlin has put the two up quite a bit this season. And the Steelers have been doing good, but I think the NFL's getting what they asked for.
Yeah.
They wanted the PAT to be more competitive. And I think that ultimately makes the game of kicking more competitive.
All right, let's We'll put that on hold for a little while. Let's talk about the actual what happened, what went on in the game. Michael Vick, initial impressions. What did you think of his performance? Were you surprised at all? Stuff like that.
I thought he did his job. I think his job was to go in there, to not make mistakes, to put the Steelers in a position to win that football game, which he did. And even in overtime, he got him down the field. He got him in decent position. I think that when it came down to it at the end, it was Scobie, but at the end it was also Mike Tomlin. You know, it's fourth and one. You have arguably one of the best running backs in football.
Right.
And he chose to give it to Michael Vick to pass that ball. And I just don't think that was the right decision. I think that, you know, you have to trust your guy. And to me, I don't think he did.
Do you think that Mike Tomlin is doing a good job coaching this team? Or do you think that the Steelers need to find a replacement?
I like the way Mike Tomlin coaches team. I think he's a player's coach. People like to play for him, which I think is important. You know, they have a great chemistry on the Steelers. And, you know, they're not perfect. I just think if you're looking at that situation, he didn't make the right call in that situation.
I agree with Sam. I mean, definitely wasn't a great play call. I can't blame Michael Vick for that. He was asked late in the fourth quarter. He also had a fourth down that he kept on. That's just a questionable play call. They said that was kind of like a two-point conversion play, and you could have handed it off to Bell. And, you know, he was rolling that game. And then to pass on fourth down also, that's just a questionable play call. I can't blame Vick for that. Overall, I thought he played pretty well stepping in for Roethlisberger. But I don't have a problem with Tomlin. Coaches make questionable play calls. I mean, it happens. Mm-hmm. Not everyone's perfect. Overall, I think Tomlin's done a great job in his tenure at Pittsburgh, but definitely don't agree with the two fourth down calls. But overall, I thought Vic did well.
I think if the Steelers would have won the game, Vic would have done in the eyes of Steeler fans, he would have done a marvelous job. But because the Steelers lost, especially to the Ravens, Vic's no good. Vic didn't play well. That was stupid of them bringing him in. I only saw a little bit of the first quarter and the fourth quarter, but what I saw didn't really. It was what I expected, and I think he did a little better than what I expected. I thought he did very well for his first game. It was an overtime loss, and questionable calls down the stretch with Coach Tomlin. I think he did a good job. If Ben's out for 4 weeks, I think the next three can be wins. Yeah. No way are you going to give up on him. He played well. It was a big – pressure was on him. The pressure was on his opponent because no one saw the Ravens losing four straight, going 0-4 in a season. So both teams had to play for something, the Steelers, to prove that Vic is – the guy they want as their backup, and then obviously the Ravens playing for dignity, kind of. So, but I think overall Vic did his job, and obviously he made mistakes, so Ben's going to coach him on that. His coaches are going to coach him on that, Haley, Tomlin. So, and I think then they get San Diego, I believe, coming up, so yep. Monday night, so –
San Diego.
Go into San Diego.
You got 10 days to prepare.
You got 10 days of prayer, and he only had it. They had the short week mm-hmm. playing Thursday night, so he gets
– very true.
And you have Brian back.
You get Brian coming back. So, like I said last week, he has the tools he needs. Now his coaches have to have faith in him, and he has to have faith in himself. Go in – once again, big game. The light's going to be on him Monday Night Football. Go into San Diego and prove yourself.
I think something that's really underappreciated or underobserved when it comes to that game is the chemistry between Ben Roethlisberger and Antonio Brown that they had. Because you were looking at the throws that Vic was making. There was one, you know, Antonio Brown dropped a touchdown in the end zone. And that's something that just doesn't usually happen.
I think we're one Antonio Brown touchdown away from coming and looking at this game from a whole different perspective. I'll tell you what my expectations were from that game. I talked to my brother about this. I think I briefly talked to you guys about this, but I thought that Todd Haley would beat a dead horse with the running game. Just run Le'Veon Bell 30 times, give D'Angelo Williams, 10-15 carries also. And then after you would get a big down, two big gains in a row, that's when you play action and you let Michael Vick use that deep ball that he has made a career on, that he knows how to do, that he is good at. And you saw the deep ball that he threw to Brown was right in his hands. He had to slide to try and make a catch. But I think even Antonio Brown will tell you 99 out of 100 times he will make that catch. Something that I didn't really think about until the game started was the difference between a right-handed quarterback and a left-handed quarterback. And just the way that the ball comes in and the way that it's spinning. Because the way that Antonio Brown tried to attempt to make that catch, he had his right arm out to stop the ball. But as it would be rotating from Roethlisberger's hand, it would have gone and deflected back into his chest. But since it was spinning the other way, he put his hand out there and it spun off of his hand, and that's why he dropped the ball. Now, granted, that shouldn't have happened. He should have caught the ball. And, you know, that's not really a good excuse, but those things happen. I think Michael Irvin even said it on when I was listening to the NFL halftime show, that he said that is a huge factor in being a receiver, knowing how the ball comes in, knowing which way it's spinning, so that you can adjust those catches properly.
That needs to be worked out in practice, I think.
Yeah.
Like, that's when you work out the little things, and that to me is a little thing, like you said, not an excuse to drop a ball in a game. So work on, if you know the ball is going to be thrown at you differently, and I personally think when left-handed quarterbacks throw the ball, it just looks awkward the way they have to, like, I don't know, it just looks awkward to me, and it always has. Well, I'm a lefty, but like, I don't play football. Like, I throw a football, but I'm not a quarterback, like you say, so like. But, yeah, that has to be worked out. Like, Brown should know how that ball is going to come to him, and they need to work that out in practice.
To be fair, they only had 3 days. They had Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
And that's probably the last thing they were thinking about.
I don't think Todd Haley went, all right, Mike, now throw Antonio the Brown and watch how it's spinning because it's different. Make sure you know that. I don't think that actually
was a factor. But if that is a factor, then that is something they
I think
need
that's,
to focus on.
Yeah.
I think that's something, too, that comes with time. He's worked with Ben Roethlisberger for how many years now? It's kind of tough to adjust to a left-handed quarterback within 3 days, let alone even a season almost. It's tough to get that timing and that that feeling down with a left-handed quarterback because, like you said, it's definitely an adjustment. It spins a completely different way. You have to position your body, position your hands in a different way. You have to be able to, you know, feel the ball a little bit different on your hands, so... It definitely played a factor in that touchdown because you don't see Antonio Brown drop those passes or many passes. So definitely, like Ian said, it needs to be worked out, but also it's going to take more time to be worked out. So hopefully with the 10 days before San Diego, maybe they can get a little bit more time and stay out of practice, something like that. But it's still going to take a little bit of time.
I mean, Roethlisberger and Brown have been together 5 years. So there's a sense of him knowing there's a sense of him knowing where Brown is going to break off his routes so that the timing of the passes, it just comes out a lot quicker. When Vic would drop back, he needs to see the receiver open, and then he throws it. Ben knows when the receiver is going to be open and throws it before he's open, knowing that he will get open and the ball will be there when he gets open. So there's that sense. But can we all agree that Michael Vick – and the entire offense was so much more conservative in the second half and overtime.
Oh, for sure.
Just going back to the third downs, the third and shorts and the fourth downs that they went for instead of trying to kick a field goal with Scobie. I mean, granted, he missed two. The game should have been over. As soon as Flacco was sacked on that fourth down, inside their own territory, it should have been over with a minute 30 left. The game should have been done. But then you have a quick three and out. The Ravens using all three of their timeouts. Scobie misses the field goal. Flacco drives down the field, and they tie the game on Justin Tucker's field goal, which ironically was at the open part of the end zone, and it was a longer field goal. So there's probably more of a reason why Scobie was let go. I'm really interested to see how Boswell, how they use him. I am interested because he's never played in an NFL game before. He's never kicked an NFL ball before. And the first time you are presented on this in the spotlight, I think it can be really
on a Monday night game in
San
Diego.
I would be very surprised if they did not go for two at least 75% of the time after they score a touchdown. I think the addition of Martavis Bryant is going to be huge also.
But they had to see something in him, you know, like to just get rid of their kicker now. I mean, as bad as Josh Kobe was playing, you're right. You sign this guy who's never played a regular season game before. I mean, I would hope that it's something that the Steelers saw in him that was good. They weren't just kind of winging it.
Yeah, I mean, you could say the same thing about when they traded for Scobie.
You're right. But they're probably looking at numbers there, too. You know, you look at him in the past, and it looked like he was going to be a guy who could at least be consistent.
Yeah, that was a couple decades ago when Josh Scobie was in his 20s still. But, Grant, Ian?
I have one more thing. In terms of mentality, like you said, if the Steelers go 75% of the time for two after a touchdown, or they elect to go for it on fourth and short or something of that caliber, then do you think possibly Boswell's going to have the mentality of get in his head that they don't have confidence in me, they don't want to use me, but when they actually give him the chance, that mentality comes back to hurt him because he's going in with a negative mindset? That's the only thing like I'm thinking of, possibly. But maybe he's like, okay, fine, it's my first time, let's go. Monday night, let's go. And it depends if it's a long or a chip
I think they would need to get him going with a PAT early to build his confidence.
If you have a chance for a short field goal, you'd almost want to get him out there as long as you're not down. On the situation.
Depending
on
the situation. Less than 30
but yards. If you score first, I'd just go with a field goal, the PAT to kind of get him rolling. Just in case you do need that later on in the game, you kind of have some confidence built up from him, which is big for a rookie and especially a kicker. So if the situation presents itself, I think you have to get him going early, especially on like a PAT or a short field goal, because you may need him later on in the game.
Real quick, where do you think this game ends up? San Diego, Pittsburgh Steelers, Monday Night Football.
I think the Steelers will win. I have confidence, especially after watching the Browns almost beat the Chargers. That always makes you feel a little bit better. I think you give the 10 days, and it's more than the 3 days they had with Baltimore. The defense made me feel very confident. When I watched them against Baltimore, I think that they're going to be able to get pressure on Phillip Rivers and hopefully slow down the running game because they looked really good in that stance too. So once again, it's going to come down to the defense, but I think the Steelers will pull it out.
Yeah, I agree. I think the Steelers will win mainly because they do have the 10-day rest and they're coming in kind of ticked off a little bit. You know, Baltimore got away from them. They were up big in that game, and then they just kind of fell off. Scobie's gone, so they don't kind of have that baggage leaning on them. Like, they don't have that press. And also, Martavis Bryant's back. That could prove big for Vic. And Le'Veon, you know, second game back, he's going to be wanting definitely his first win this year with the Steelers. So I definitely can see I definitely do see Pittsburgh pulling this off by at least a touchdown, I'd say.
27-17 Steelers. I think Vic's going to do work. You're going to see him use Bryant. And I think our defense is 17's quite – it's a little bit much, but for defense to give up. But I think our defense is going to stand out. I think they're going to get pressure on Phillips. And I think a lot of those 17 points, I'm going to give them two touchdowns. It's going to be on the running game and maybe just a touchdown at the end of the game. But I think the Steelers are going to – I think they, like Colin said, or you or Sam said, that they're going to come in a little ticked off, and you don't have negativity. You know what Vic brings. You don't have Scobie anymore. That negativity, Brian coming back, good news on Ben Roethlisberger's injury today. He's still has pain, but his doctor thinks he's going good. So that positive news.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah, I think that helps the team mentality as well, knowing that they're starting their star quarterback's on his way back and his recovery is going well. I think the Steelers are just going to come out and just play the old-fashioned Steelers football, run the game, use Bell, use D'Angelo, and I think Tomlin's going to learn from his mistakes, or maybe not. Maybe he's going to make those, but I don't think they're going to put himself in a situation where he's going to have to make that tough call in overtime. I think they're going to be up like 27-10 at some point in the fourth quarter.
Chargers have the 31st ranked defense so far this year. The Steelers have the 15th, which is surprising in its own right.
I'll take it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone coming in thought, you know what, maybe they can be a top 15 defense. I don't think that happened. Especially with Shazier out. I think if Shazier is able to return this week against the Chargers, that they will really, really have a solid game defensively. And they'll try and rely on Le'Veon Bell, D'Angelo Williams, using that running game, like you said, and eventually just try and let Vic be Michael Vick. You're always going to have the problems with Vic having the fumble issues and the ball control and taking a bunch of hits because he's a smaller stature quarterback. But I agree with all of you. I think the Steelers should win this game. I mean, come on. The Browns almost beat them. Let's be real.
Take advantage of numbers. Take advantage of that 31st ranking. They're in that spot for a reason.
Yeah.
Get Le'Veon Bell in there. You know, you have advantage. Take care of
him. He's Brian, too.
And we'll talk. We have a lot more to talk about with the Steelers in the coming weeks. But when we come back, Sports Talk in the Berg, the wild card game tomorrow.
Bucktober,
baby. We'll talk about the Cole matchup with Jake Arrieta, Arrieta's battle on Twitter, and some other stuff that I found when we come back on Army Radio, your campus, your voice.
RMU Radio, your award-winning station. 2015 Intercollegiate Broadcasting System's Best Specialty Show Finalist Comment.
لكن في سؤال عندي الآن، هل تعتقد الممثل لابد أن يكون يعني إنسان متوسع في أفكاره؟
And 2015 Best News Interview Finalist Ben Cole with Scott Erlbacher.
Let's put you in West Virginia and running their Greek life. If this happened under your watch, what would you have done?
Society for Collegiate Journalists, first place internet radio overall excellence.
You are tuned into Underground Hits.
Welcome to Out of My Element.
This is Colonial Talk.
Sports Talk in the Berg.
Welcome to Literature Out Loud.
RMU Radio, your campus, your voice.
I took the path that you would never want for me. I know I let you down tonight. So many sleepless nights where you were waiting up on me. Well, I'm just a slave unto the night. Now remember when I told you that's the last you'll see of me. Remember when I broke you down to tears. I know I took the path that you would never want for me. So why? Everything I do. Now remember when I told you that's the last you'll see of me. Remember when I broke you down to tears. I know I took the path that you would never want for me. I gave you hell through all the years. So don't
tell me that I'm wrong. I've walked that road before and left you on your own. And please believe them when they say that it's left for yesterday and the records that I play. Please forgive me for all I've done. So why?
Sports Talk in the Bird coming back at you live from RMU Radio, your campus, your voice. I thought my mic was unmuted, but it was not. It was muted. My fault.
That was such a Colin move right there. Come
I
on.
Think that's because you didn't play Wildest Dreams.
Oh, there's some bad blood going on over here.
Oh, my.
I knew that was coming, and yet I still cringed whenever you said it. Because why wouldn't you cringe whenever something that stupid was said. let's be serious here. There's a big game tomorrow. It all comes down. I hate it. I really don't like the. I hate it and I love it at the same
stresses
time.
Stresses me out.
You play 162 games
and it comes down to
and
this.
And if you have a bad start, oh, you're sorry. Your season doesn't mean anything. You made the playoffs, but not
good
really.
Job.
No pressure.
Right.
You're fine.
The Jake Arrieta versus Garrett Cole matchup has drawn more attention, more hype, I think, than any other matchup in this postseason will so far. Maybe later down into the playoffs, there will be another like really good matchup. Cole versus Kershaw, or Cole Waka, or if the
you're being
Cubs
very
win,
positive here about the Pirates. I do like it.
If the Cubs win, then Arrieta versus Kershaw or whatever, however it would get there. But it's a big thing. You got two of the NL's top pitchers. Jake Arrieta, arguably the best pitcher in the National League over the last 3 months. His ERA is somewhere between 0 and 0.5 over the last 3 months of the season, which
is
outstanding.
0.41.
0.41 in the last 3 months of the season, in his last 20 starts. The last pitcher to do that, I think, was Bob Gibson. So that's a Hall of Fame pitcher.
Long time ago, too.
Long time ago, when the mound was really high and the strike zone was really wide. So, but that's not the only thing that is being talked about with this matchup. You have the fact that Jake Arrieta is really, I would say, trolling the Pirate fans on Twitter, trolling everyone on Twitter about the blackout. I'll just read this tweet really fast, and then we'll talk about it. This is from the Pirate Parrot parody account. Tweeting at Jake Arrieta, be ready for the, quote, be ready for the sea of black, hashtag blackout, hashtag bucking, hashtag crowd is going to eat you alive, hashtag walk the plank. Jake Arrieta
so
responds, And in the on the photo actually has Jake Arrieta's face on Jake from the State Farm commercials, which I thought was really funny. But instead of ignoring it, like he probably should have done, he basically attacked it head on and tweeted at this account and said, quote, whatever keeps your hope alive, just know it doesn't matter, at Cubs. And then, he quoted that tweet. So it's safe to say he's not worried.
Well, I mean, I can sit behind a computer screen too and tell you I'm not worried. I mean, you know, Jake Arrieta has no reason not to be confident. I mean, it seems like no matter what he does, you know, the worst thing he's going to do is let up a run. That seems to be the worst thing that's going to happen to him.
Right.
And so, I mean, to sit there and be confident, I mean, makes a lot of sense. But this is a whole different atmosphere. I don't think he actually fully understands what he's going into, because I've been to a Pirates game in the regular season, and you see that compared to what goes on in the playoffs, and it's – you just – I mean, you can't be prepared for
it. Hang on every pitch.
For him, that tweet really surprised me out of him. I didn't expect him to reply, let alone to go to that extreme. But, I mean, he does have the numbers to back it up, especially against the Pirates. This year, he's 3-1 with a .75 ERA against the Pirates in five appearances. And only has allowed 18 hits. So that's an impressive stat right there against a team that they're playing tomorrow. So he does have a reason to be confident. But to go to Twitter and kind of put it out like that, it's definitely – it almost comes across as cocky. But I don't know. I mean, he hasn't proven that he's kind of slouched off of what he's done since August 1st. I mean, .41 ERA, that's insane. It's unheard of. So I definitely surprised. But, I mean – I don't know. I guess I'll have to see how tomorrow goes.
If this bothers him in the way PNC is going to be tomorrow night, we don't know what they're, like, chanting. I guess we'll figure that out when the game starts. If that actually, like, bothers him, then, like, he's not the Cy Young winner. Like, this shouldn't bother him. I think he's going to be Cy Young winner or not. But, like, obviously he can't blame the crowd if he goes out there and he does – what happened to Cueto a few years back with the Cueto chants from PNC. Mm-hmm. The guy's 22-6. He last game against the Pirates, on Sunday Night Baseball, threw a no-hitter through seven, I believe. That was at Wrigley, but he's still 3-1 against us. He shouldn't, like – but if he feels empowered to start this Twitter stuff, then good for him, I guess. But, like, does he know that – like, Pirate fans are going to come right back at him and, like, destroy him on Twitter? I don't know. I guess he has to go out there and prove himself, because if he doesn't, they'll be like, oh, you're a big game, but you can't pitch when it matters the most, when your team needs you the most in a one-game playoff, when everybody thought they would be starting John Lester. Because you would think, like, beginning of the season, any of you think that Arrieta was going to be better than Lester?
Exactly.
He's one of those guys, like, he's one of these Cubs young pitchers. We'll put seven up against him in three innings.
No idea who Jake Arrieta was.
And this guy is
phenomenal. He didn't even have a
beard
at the beginning of the season, so I couldn't respect him. I mean,
well, he wears a onesie, too. Like,
I'll read another tweet on here. For the record, he always does this on Twitter. This isn't specific to
this.
So
we're not surprised here when we see this.
Yeah. We have to take it in context. This isn't a random thing. He always is a weird personality on Twitter, I guess you could say. It's just how some people are. But I thought this one was really funny. An NPR host, his name is David Green, tweeted that he was going to start using Pro Pirates hashtag We Matter after that, and to try and get people to come to the stadium and like really go all out against Arrieta. And Arrieta tweeted against at that, he said, David, bring out all the reinforcements. This is quoted. Quote, David, bring out all the reinforcements. I need it loud. End quote. So that was also so I just thought, oh man, this guy's really, really confident in that he can really produce when it matters most.
So you said he takes the Twitter like this
frequently.
Okay, that's a little bit better, I guess. I didn't know that he did that. I don't follow him on Twitter, but Still a lot of confidence out of him. That really does surprise me, especially for a pitcher who pitches tomorrow and probably his biggest game of his career, especially almost Chicago's biggest game in how many years?
Oh, yeah.
So, I don't know. I mean, maybe that's his way of, like, coping with everything going on at once. He just kind of does his regular routine. I don't know. I mean, he has the statistics to back it up, but I'm anxious to see how it is tomorrow because the playoffs is a different atmosphere. It's not the regular season anymore. You're not seeing the same teams. You're seeing the Pirates. And McCutchen against Arrieta this year, I believe, is batting .348. So that could come up to kind of haunt him. So I'm really surprised that he took to Twitter like that. But if he does it frequently, I guess
yeah,
that might
be
his way.
Yeah, it says he's one
of
the Cubs, quote, most interesting personalities on Twitter, end quote.
I mean, I believe that. But, you know, if I'm the Pirates, I say bring it on. I say you're the team that's the more experienced team here.
Which is odd to say. Isn't that weird that
for
we're
a team
that
was
the Pirates are the more experienced team in the playoffs? I think that's really odd. But continue. I like
it. Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. You have to, you know, take the wins where we can get them. Pirates are a better team than it shows in, you know, we're in the wild card game because we are the second best team in baseball. But I think the Pirates have to realize that they are the second best team in baseball. You have to go out there and you have to play like you deserve to have that spot in the NLDS. Like, you should have been there, but, you know, the Cardinals are there to take it away, or, you know, the Mets or the Dodgers, who definitely don't deserve that spot. You know, you're playing there, and you're playing like you're the best team in baseball. Like, that division was yours. And I think they can play that way.
Arrieta has that .41 ERA over the last 3 months of the season. But last season, Clayton Kershaw had one of the greatest overall seasons a pitcher has ever had. And then they get to the playoffs, and Clayton Kershaw has an ERA of over 5. So I'm not saying that that is necessarily going to happen to Jake Arrieta. There are pitchers like Madison Bumgarner who come alive in the playoffs. And there are pitchers that just stay the course. It doesn't change a thing for them. But if we're talking about probabilities, the likelihood of Jake Arrieta maintaining this .41 ERA clip that he's sustained is so unlikely. The statistical probability is so low that I think there's a – I wouldn't put a percentage on it. There's an okay chance.
All right.
Is
that good?
There's a little chance that I can like, something's telling me in the back of my head that could happen, that Jake Arrieta suddenly just collapses under in the playoffs, which, again, it wouldn't be the first time a pitcher has done that in the playoffs of that caliber, like Clayton Kershaw last year. One thing I wanted to say, when you said the McCutchen thing, I think it's worth noting that McCutchen is batting somewhere in the 100s in September, had in October combined. And when you have your best player, obviously he's their best player, struggling going into the postseason, that's never a good thing. Aramis Ramirez hasn't produced that much in the last few weeks leading up to it. Pedro Alvarez has continued to struggle defensively, and he's going to start at first base in that game.
That scares me so much.
I think it would be very fitting if the game ended on some, like, the outcome of the game was determined by an error in the Polanco has struggled fielding in the outfield.
Yeah, we saw that in St. Louis.
Yeah, we saw that a couple times when the Pirates really had an opportunity to take the division. They had a chance to take the division if they would have controlled their own debt. They could have done that.
All he had to do was pick up a baseball. That's all he had to do.
If they would have won out, they would have won the division. We wouldn't even be talking about this right now. We would be saying who are the Pirates going to face in the NLDS in Pittsburgh game one on Friday. But that's not what we're doing. We are here and now. Just a little update on the AL wild card game. The Yankees just suffered, or the Astros rather, they just scored one run in the top
of
the second to go up.
Bases loaded.
Yeah, it's the in between innings now.
It was a Colby Rasmus home run.
Yes. So the Astros are up 1-0 in the middle of the second inning. over the New York Yankees at Yankee Stadium. So we'll keep a close eye on that. After we come back from our last break of the show, we'll finish up with the Pirates. And I have a little tidbit. I have a little conspiracy theory.
Oh, he's excited.
On why I think the outcome of the Pirate game tomorrow could be determined by this game.
Wrong tonight. Show for this.
And, of course, we'll talk about the Penguins starting their season on Thursday. When we come back at Sports Talk in the Berg, RMU Radio, your campus, your voice.
I do. I believe one day I'll be.
Your campus, your voice, your Colonials. RMU Radio is the home for men's basketball.
Stewart in transition, a mini throws one down over JoJo Cooper. Put him on a poster.
Men's hockey.
For Zach Lynch, he's going to go for the net. Can they make it four? He does!
And RMU football. Listen online at rmuradio.com or on the Century Media app. Your Colonials play right here on RMU Radio.
RMU Radio, your campus, your voice. Don't you like those new commercials that we have now?
I do.
I like it.
I like them.
Sports Talk in the Burg coming at you live. Let's end the Pirates talk. No. I'll say it if we have time.
All right, that sounds good.
Let's say best case, worst case scenario. What do the Pirates need to do? And we were talking about this before. What do the Pirates need to do to win this game tomorrow?
Garrett Cole, no hitter. I'm going to say it right now. That's all I'm going to say.
Knock on wood.
That's asking a lot.
I did see on Twitter that a bunch of GM executives said that Garrett Cole could be this postseason's Madison Bumgarner.
That's what I like to hear.
But Cole's already at that caliber, though, that, like, you expect him. It was last year Bumgarner was good.
He was their ace, though.
Good, but, like, he wasn't what – like people expect.
Well, I mean, but not everyone's always talking about Garrett Cole. I mean, true. He's good, but everyone's talking about Jake Arrieta. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So.
Very true.
But the comment on your Cole has to throw a no-hitter, he can throw a no-hitter all he wants. His team has to get him runs. Yeah, he can throw a no-hitter through nine, but doesn't really count as a no-hitter if he doesn't – they don't score him a run and say Melanson comes in or Watson or Soria comes in. They give up a run. They lose 1-0. Like, I'm being a negative Nancy right now, but...
Yeah, don't do that, man.
My thing is that my key is they got to score. Get the Arrieta early. Get them rattled. That's what they did to Cueto. From the second inning on, they got him rattled.
Cueto's not the kind of pitcher. He wasn't the kind of pitcher that Jake Arrieta has
but
been.
But I think the Pirates need a first... they need a run in the first inning, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
Hopefully
20 runs in the first inning. That's not going to happen, yeah, so at least get something on the board.
I think we can all agree that they need to score to win this game.
Well, yeah. They can't leave 16 men on left the base.
You have to keep Arrieta's pitches... or you have to allow Arrieta to throw a lot of pitches early so he does kind of maybe tire out a little bit. He has went a lot of games this year with over 100 pitches, but you can't allow him to just deal and deal and deal. You have to foul pitches off. You have to get runners on base. You have to put him in uncomfortable situations so he can only go maybe 5-6 innings. If he can go 6 innings, I'd be very surprised if the Pirates don't win this game. If he goes more than, you know, 7, if he goes 7 2/3, 8 innings, I'd be very surprised if the Pirates win. So it definitely comes down to how Arrieta plays early on, how he pitches early on against the Pirates lineup. I think they definitely need to force him to throw a lot of pitches early. That's the main key of this game, in my opinion.
My key is don't commit any errors.
Pedro.
And Polanco. Those are – if they do not commit an error, if they play a sound defensive game, then I think a no-hitter is possible.
They're capable of it.
Then I think that Cole going completing a shutout would be possible. Him even going 9 innings would be a possibility, I guess I should say.
Don't give him free runs.
Yeah,
basically.
I mean, Cole has been notoriously good in September and October, but if you don't let him pitch, like, he knows that his defense will back him up, he's going to try and just blow by hitters and get 13 strikeouts, and something like that would cause the walks to pile up, and then one hit can break open a ball game. And I think, especially with Jake Arrieta on the mound, how hot he's been, how stellar he's been against the Pirates, especially, they need to take care of their game and worry about let the game come to you. Don't let the atmosphere and everything around them, don't let that make you want to do more than you should. I think that you can say that for every game, but especially in the playoffs like this. It is so crucial that everyone plays their individual anticipated role in that they don't have to play above their abilities, because if they try to do that, they will lose this game and it won't be close.
Yeah, don't try to do more than – or try to be more than you are, I think. That's what I'm thinking. Like, don't, like, I think if they overthink it, like, they go in there and they think, okay, no, like, Pedro on first base. No errors tonight. Perfect clean game, no errors. I think he'll make an error.
Yeah. That, I mean,
Polanco, just field the ball. Do what you've done your whole life. If you, like, field the ball, we see him have fielding troubles. Field the ball. Field the ball. Pedro, catch the ball.
That's
do,
it.
Do what you've been trained at. Like, do and play eventually, your position.
And eventually play small ball, get a runner on, bunt him over, and then get a hit. And get
I think
him
a lot of it has to come down the hurdle, too, how he coaches this game. Playing small ball comes down to his calls, too. Does he want to play small ball or does he want to go cutthroat?
True, but in a one-game scenario, you have to play small ball. If you don't play small ball in a one-game scenario, you're dead in the water.
If Kutch gets on first, you got to get him over to second. Or you use the speed. If Marte is on first, you got to get him to second. If he steals second, get him the third. Bunt, get him the third.
I'm really interested to see how he's going to work the lineup. Because
I think it's gonna be what you typically seen.
What have we typically seen though?
True.
We've seen Polanco leading off, Harrison leading off, Marte batting second, batting fourth, batting fifth, Cervelli batting sixth, batting seventh, batting fifth. We really don't know what it's actually gonna be. Alvarez batting sixth, seventh, fifth.
I like this lineup Sunday. It was the first top three were Polanco, Harrison, Kutch.
With McCutchen struggling, do you take him out of that
three-hole?
Neil Walker has been on fire recently. So has Josh Harrison.
I think Kutch has to be in that third spot. Where would you put him? Where do you think? Wait, if they decide to take him,
you could put him in the cleanup spot. Okay. Where
and
it
put
looks
Walker
like
third,
maybe.
Or do you put like Alvarez third?
Because
I don't think you put Alvarez third.
Because Aramis Ramirez hasn't been producing in the power numbers that you would expect from a cleanup hitter. I'm not totally sure he wouldn't start though. I honestly
think you're gonna see Pedro at first, Harrison at third,
Mercer at short,
Walker at second, Cervelli and Cole. That has to be your
My ideal lineup. Oh, and we should talk about this too. There is a hashtag going around that I tweeted even. Hashtag Gong first pitch. I think it would send the team in such a right direction if they had Jung Ho Gong come onto the field, crutches and all, and throw out the first
pitch.
And
I assume he'll be with the team.
Yeah, I mean, he'll be there.
Because he hasn't. Yeah. He's been home, but
he'll be there.
I also heard Lanny first pitch, too, for Lanny for Terry.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely they should do that.
Yeah. I think getting Gong out there, get the fans into it.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to get a standing ovation.
Favorite. He's definitely a fan favorite.
I love the guy. Like, I would love to see that. Like, I love Jung Ho Gong.
Words can't describe your love
for
him.
No, yeah. Like, I love the guy. I love to see it. I thought – but that would – I don't think it would – that. I think that would be announced by now. Unless they're keeping it
a secret.
They might
keep it a secret. Hopefully they keep it a secret. Because
if it's a secret, then that would get – PNC Park may literally rock.
Yeah, so that's what I'm hoping for, because the more crazy the stadium gets,
the better
the chance can get.
But
like,
apparently Arrieta loves that, so he wants it loud. So maybe not. I don't know.
He doesn't know what he's talking about. That's all I'm saying.
That's what I'm thinking, yeah.
There's a certain Pittsburghese term to define a arrogant jerk that would be, if you inserted Arrieta's first name before the word, before the second part of the word, would make a good chant. I feel like I talked about this with my dad. He agreed. He thought it would be a good chant to have, because you can't say Arrieta, like that would
work.
It doesn't work. It only works for two syllables. And the fact that it was organic, like no one knew that was going to happen. The fact that it was just so raw, that's why it was so cool and it was so powerful. But now that they do it all the time, it lost its meaning. I don't think that they should do that.
And to what you said about Arrieta not knowing what he's talking about,
yeah.
I agree with that to a point, because you could have – no one knew that Cueto chant was going to happen. But if you asked Johnny before the game, hey, if they start chanting your name, would that bother you? Would the loudness bother you? 100 bucks, he'd say no. Mm-hmm. But clearly, like, he dropped the ball, he dropped the ball. That had to be the reason why.
Yeah,
he struggled.
And then he gave up back-to-back home runs.
Russell Wilson, right after that, Russell Wilson knocked one out left field. Johnny can't say that didn't affect him. So like you said, maybe Arrieta doesn't know what he's talking about. He hasn't been in that situation, a blackout yet. Intimidating. It shouldn't be intimidating to a pitcher, but that's how life is sometimes. Situations put you in intimidating situations.
Real quick, game predictions. Go.
All right, Pirates are going to win 1-0.
Pirates over the Cubs 1-0.
Get a cold no hitter. No
nail biter.
The line right now is Cubs minus 140, which means that it's like it would be 2-1 or 1-0, something in the one run range.
Pirates 3-1.
Okay.
4-2 Pirates.
Oh my God, I feel bad saying this, but I have to say 2-0 Cubs, because Arrieta it really annoys me that the Pirates seem to be unable to take pitches out of the strike zone and then hit breaking balls. I watched McCutchen swing and miss on at least 15 breaking balls through the last three games. And I realized that as I saw it, that happens all the time. He is an average hitter when it comes to hitting the breaking ball. When it comes to hitting a fastball, the Pirates as a team are fantastic. But Jake Arrieta doesn't throw a fastball that often. The majority of his pitches...
That's why we can't hit him.
The majority of his pitches are off-speed, movement, sliders, cutters, change-ups, and that's why the Pirates struggle so much. And I really hope that they can turn it around, but honestly... In a one-game scenario, I don't think it could happen unless
all we need is one run.
Unless Jake Arrieta turns into the Clayton Kershaw of the postseason, I just don't think it'll happen. But I'll remain cautiously optimistic for tomorrow's game. TBS has the game 8:00 tomorrow night. Pirates Cubs Arrieta Cole. TBS very funny. We didn't get to talk about the Penguins tonight, but that's fine. They have their opener on Thursday. I think they're going to get to the conference finals this year. That's my opinion. Their defense is going to have to pick it up. Let them play a few games,
and then we'll talk about
get a feel for it.
Well, it's an 82-game season. Like we said, it's a long time. Zach Loffer, Ian Kiss, Colin Wilson, Sam Anthony, Sports Talk in the Berg. This has been RMU Radio, your campus, and it also has been your voice. My destiny, she said, ooh.